Chapter 8. The Emissary of the Warbird. I made the bastards wait. Sir Kay had emphasized the importance of making a proper impression, the first time a lord met his neighbours. That required rather more attention to detail about my dress and arms than I usually paid. For the last several weeks, as we had laboured so mightily to restore Sevendor, I had usually donned no more than a simple tunic over leather riding pants, riding boots, and a cloak against the chill or weather. If you encountered me on the road, you'd probably conclude I was an artisan of some sort, not a mage lord. But Sir Kay had planned on this, and had actually conspired with Alia, which was unusual for both of them. Unbeknownst to me, they had commissioned some special clothing for me from a tailor in Sendaria, when we had first arrived. I had given Alia some money to spend the 2 days we'd been there, but I'd figured she'd be buying things for the baby, or herself, not me. But at Sir Kay's urging, she had some lordly raiment stitched up for me, which had arrived with the main Bovali caravan. She had gifted it to me on Yule, and I was impressed. I've rarely purchased clothes for myself that weren't strictly utilitarian. Back in my army days, I'd pick up a few things after battles from the camp followers who looted the slain, and had them ritually cleansed before reselling. In Bovol, my wardrobe was largely the result of my client's ability to pay. I'd taken new clothes as payment almost as often as I'd taken chickens, cheese, or ale, and I did have two modestly noble outfits I'd bought in Wilderhall, but they weren't suited to country living. They were courtiers' clothes. But Sir Kay was an adept castellan serving an untutored lord and lady, and it would have been a betrayal of his office to let me meet my noble peers robed as an artisan. Hence the trunk of stylish finery befitting a country knight I rooted through to dress. There was so much, and it was all so new, I became perplexed at the possibilities. I had a sudden uncomfortable flashback to my childhood, watching my sisters fight for space in front of the looking-glass as they changed from one embroidered frock after another before a festival. I shook away my perplexity and looked at my lady wife. "Dress me?" I pleaded. She chuckled, but began sorting through the mess of garments on our bed. She selected a splendid white linen undertunic, a deep blue velvet doublet, black leather trousers of a military cut, and my best riding boots that I hadn't even gotten to wear yet. While I was struggling to pull them on, Sir Kay arrived. "Traveller is saddled and ready, Lord Minolin," he said, his eyes sparkling with the coming confrontation, "as is your escort." "Escort?" I asked, as Alia slipped her emerald around my neck. The enchantment that made it glow did add a good mystical effect to my presentation, and it was not so feminine a chain as to be unmanly. The emerald setting fell just under the pouch containing my witchstone, and the proximity to such a powerful source of energy made it brighten and pulse in a way I hoped would be impressive and intimidating. Besides, I felt closer to her when I wore it, and it did look flashy as five hells. "Of course, Mage Lord," my castellan said, as if it were obvious. "It wouldn't do to arrive less than properly represented." I noted that he was dressed for the occasion too, in full armour. His leather jacket was covered by a sturdy steel hauberk, and his sword arm was clad in plates from shoulder to wrist. His sword, usually dangling on his belt more as a symbol of his office than anything, was now strapped in a quick-draw position. Sir Kay looked every inch an imposing knight ready to ride to battle. Me, I felt like a dandy on his way to a dance. I felt a little less foppish when I strapped on my new weapons harness. It had been presented to me as a wedding gift by Rogo Redshaft, a mercenary captain I was fond of, and it was designed to be impressive. Black leather with silver fitting, it had straps for wands, daggers, pouches, and a scabbard for my new mage blade, Twilight. Once I had that sweet sword hanging over my shoulder, I actually did feel a little lordly. "All right, this is my first time. I trust your judgment. Should I wear a circlet, or a helmet, or my hat?" I fussed.
"Wear the circlet," Alia decided. "You're appearing as mage lord, not a spellmonger, and not as a war mage."
"And you agree?" I asked Sir Kay.
My castellan gave me an appraising look as Alia settled the pretty silver circlet on my temple. Technically, only the nobility could wear them, so it did emphasize my noble station. The mage lord is as pretty as a summer's day, and now if he is done preening, perhaps he could attend to our visitor? Hey, the lordly attire was your idea, I pointed out, pulling on my boots. But I'll concede it was a good one. I know the importance of impressing the locals. I recall your shop in Minden Hall, he said drolly. It wasn't as bad as Garkescu's, but it did seem overly macabre. If you want good magic, then you want a spellmonger who knows all the secrets of the universe. One who has a lot of mystical-looking crap in his lab. If you want a powerful mage lord with a resolute militia at his back to intimidate the neighbours, then I should look the part. The question is, do I? You are by far the most intimidating mage lord I have ever seen, proclaimed Sir Kay diplomatically. Shall we depart? This might take a while, I murmured to Alia as I kissed her goodbye. Don't wait on dinner for me. You boys play nice, she warned us as we headed downstairs. You just got those clothes, don't mess them up. They cost a fortune. What a delightful mother she will make, Sir Kay said tactfully as my cheeks coloured. So it seems. So, I said, desperate to change the subject as we headed for the door. What plan would you suggest? Ride in and start killing, or talk first? It occurs to me, Mage Lord, that you need merely appear, assert your claim to the veil, reject the claim of right of conquest due to the illegal nature of the deed, and then stand there and look defiantly at them until they slink away in defeat. And you think it will be that easy? I asked, as we crossed through the great hall. There was a young Bovali girl peeling boiled eggs at the table, and I stopped to grab a few for breakfast. I think it likely, he agreed. A strong and defiant stance, delivered with the confidence of arms, is often enough of a display to end these territorial disputes. If the other lord feels that you are too strong for him to overcome, then he will find some way to rationalize the reality of the situation to save face, and accept the results, even if they do not favour him. And if they don't, just slink away? I asked as we came out of the main gate to where our horses were being held for us. Then we ride in and start killing Mage Lord, the knight assured me. He sounded confident, and when I stepped out of the gatehouse and into the bailey, I could see why. Behind Traveller and Sir Kay's horse, both well-groomed and looking splendid in the winter morning sunshine, were 20 more horses. Sir Ferrando and his garrison were mounted, and even if some of the mounts were more suitable for pulling ploughs than charging a foe, when you put them all together like that, they looked formidable. And behind them were easily 200 Bovali. Most were armed with spear or bow, and some were quite well armed. Quite unexpectedly, they all cheered and blew horns the moment they saw me, my mouth stuffed with egg. I swallowed quickly, wiped my mouth, and waved to my men. My men. Not mercenaries, or at least not most of them, not paid soldiers, but men who had taken a knee and placed their weapons at my feet in token of their loyalty and service. This seems a little large for an escort, I whispered hoarsely to Sir Kay. I asked for volunteers, he explained, also taken aback by the display. Perhaps I should have been more specific, but if the goal is to intimidate through a show of arms, it occurs to me that the more arms shown, the greater the intimidation. A couple of 100 well-armed peasants and 2 dozen knights, that might do it, I agreed. Don't forget your own puissance, Mage Lord, he said, just mockingly enough to keep from being disrespectful. You are, after all, a knight mage, a war mage of repute throughout the duchies, and your two apprentices are also knights magi. And one of them doesn't know which end of a sword to hold, I reminded him dryly. Sir Tyndall more than makes up for Sir Rondol's lack of experience, he soothed, and both await you in the village. I pulled myself into Traveller's saddle and dug my feet into the stirrups. At your convenience, Sir Kay, I nodded. He nodded back and called the line to order. Once again I was leading men to, or perhaps just toward, battle. Somehow I felt less grim about it this time. Perhaps because I was defending my own lands, or perhaps because I was doing so with the Bovoli who had come to depend on me. But as we led the column of troops at a walk down the road, and despite my class consciousness, I found myself sitting taller in the saddle and feeling positively lordly. The key to this will be presenting such an irresistible posture of strength that the opposition cannot conceive of a successful engagement, Sir Kay continued to lecture me as we led my escort down the hill. The petty nobility are like dogs, he added unflatteringly, an uncharacteristically candid observation from Sir Kay. They sniff each other's asses to see if they can win, he explained, and if there is no doubt that they cannot, they assume a more servile posture. They respect only two things, military strength and gold. You forgot honour, I reminded him. I did not, Mage Lord. He countered, they respect arms and gold. Honour is only a factor in relation to that. A poor knight might be as honourable as Huin, but that will not earn him respect. If he commands many men or has a wealthy estate, then his honour will compound the respect they feel for him. But weakness and penury are ignoble, he said, as if it were the law of nature. So it doesn't really matter if I treat them honourably, as long as I impress upon them that Sevendor is under aggressive new management. So it occurs to me, Mage Lord, he agreed, grace without strength is posturing. If you cannot demonstrate your ability to resolutely defend your lands, then it will not matter how gracious and honourable you are. Other people will try to take them from you. I'll keep that in mind, I agreed, as we clip-clopped across the wooden bridge over the stream. Come spring, that would be replaced with a proper stone bridge. That was on the list. What if it does come to blows? As long as they are the aggressor and you are defending, then the law is on your side. But they must strike first, or endeavour to cross your frontier against your will. Once that happens, then whatever happens will be up to the Mage Lord and the gods. Well, at least someone responsible will be involved then, I griped. It's going to take the infantry a while to cross that bridge. Shall we ride ahead and meet my apprentices? I didn't wait for his agreement. One of the perks about being a lord is not asking for permission. I gently spurred Traveller into a trot, and then let him run for a stretch, until we started passing a stretch of new houses that was being laid out on the north side of the road. I slowed and patted my mount's neck. I don't exactly love riding, but Traveller is the best horse I've had, and I enjoyed letting him have a bit of a run. As Sir Kay caught up with me, there were two things I noticed immediately about the village. First, it was overcrowded, with wagons and tents and campfires surrounding the few huts and houses. The commons swarmed with children, their breath misting in the cold as they ran around screaming and shouting merrily. I figured they were still enjoying the recent memory of the best Yule of their lives. But they were excited because of the other thing I noticed, what seemed like every adult male in Sevendor, milling around the area where the commons met the road near the village. Another 300 or 400 at least, and not all Bovali. I noted a few scrawny-looking folk from Genley, Southridge and Gurisham, as well as Gerlord and his men, brandishing their new spears. There were three or four horsemen on the road. Sir Tyndall was one of them, riding a strong brown stallion that looked like far more horse than he could handle. But then Tyndall wasn't the lad he was last year. My apprentice had grown even more in the last few weeks. He had been faithfully doing his job at my direction, helping to herd the Bovali refugees upriver and across the riverlands to Sevendor, and he had been keeping in nearly daily contact with me magically. But even though I felt like he was never more than a thought away, I hadn't been prepared for what his body had been doing. He had grown another inch in the last few months, and his chest and shoulders were filling out under his armour. I saw my old mage blade, Slasher, peeking out from over his shoulder. Somehow that made me feel better too. Rondol, sorry, Sir Rondol, knight mage, was a shorter lad who was far more comfortable on foot. He was wearing armour too, a ratty, loose-fitting ringmail over a black gambeson, and there was a nameless mage blade over his shoulder. Unless he had been practising on the sly, I didn't think he knew the first thing about how to use it. His involvement in the Battle of Timberwatch had been high atop Timberwatch Tower, doing reconnaissance and scrying work. He had not struck a blow in earnest until we encountered a band of aggressive Gavanni on the way back to Wilderhall. Tyndall had the makings of a good war mage, I knew. He just had the right instincts and a low regard for other people's property. Rundle was more suited by both temperament and experience as a future court mage, or perhaps an enchanter, or even a thaumaturge, with more training. He had listened and retained far more than his former master, Garkescu, had realized, and he was far more accomplished in Imperial-style magic than Tyndall. Tyndall was just getting used to reading. But both boys were ready to follow me into battle the moment they saw me, and the crowd cheered us all on by shouting, "Mage Lord! Mage Lord!" How many other, volunteers do we have here? "At least 300, he said grimly. "Most aren't fit for much fighting, but some of the Seven Dori came out and want to help." That was encouraging. Showing up with 500 men couldn't hurt my bargaining position. Raylan didn't at all look very eager for a fight, but his men were here unbidden. Jarlaw was enthusiastic. "Here's what I want to do," I said, calling in my apprentices and Sir Kay to converse. "These folk are brave, but they're under-armored and mostly untrained. I don't want them slaughtered. Still, I want to reward them for being willing to show up without compulsion. Sir Rundle, I want you to stick with the infantry. They won't be expecting another mage to be afoot. I want Rundle to march with the yeomen here to Gurisham, to act as reserves. I don't expect that you'll be needed, but if things go badly, that will put you within a half a mile of the dike tower. After that, Rundle, move forward with the archers, behind the dike, and await my orders." My bookish apprentice nodded, his head swimming with the responsibility of sudden command. "Tyndall," I ordered, "I want you to ride ahead and act as my herald this time. Announce that I have deigned to deal with this matter personally, and will be along presently." He grinned at the special commission and stood in his stirrups to respond. "I would be honoured, Sire Menelin. The better-equipped infantry and the cavalry will move forward with me, Sir Kay. And Tyndall..."
"Sir Tyndall,"
he corrected with a grin. I shot him a look. "We will move forward to the frontier with the first-line infantry and half of our archers. I want them to be seen from the top of the dike, bows strung, but no arrows knocked. We'll talk, but we'll talk undercover. That's my plan. Any suggestions?" "A good, simple plan, Mage Lord," Sir Kay assured me thoughtfully, "appropriate to the occasion." I really hoped he wasn't just kissing my ass. It took another 20 minutes for the infantry to march past the village and up the road toward Gurisham on their way to the dike. We let them rest for 10 minutes in Gurisham and pressed on with the horsemen. By the time my mounted escort and I had come to the gap in the newly made ditch and dike guarding my frontier, the emissaries from West Flaria had been waiting close to 3 hours in the cold. We were met by Tyndall, who had ridden ahead with my instructions, and ancient Dalcalan, the mercenary petty officer who Captain Ferrando had charged with overseeing the gate that day. 6 or 7 other men in armor and bearing bows were milling around the dike, looking antsy. "How many in their party?" I asked the ancient, without preliminaries.
20, Mage Lord," Dalcalan said with a slight bow, "all armed, light cavalry, round shields and lances."
"Who leads them?"
"He says his name is Sir Brommel, an emissary from Sire Gimbal, Lord of West Flaria."
"Just a knight? No other title?"
"Not that he mentioned," Tyndall shrugged. "He seemed to think that was sufficient."
"Well, now you know in what esteem Sire Gimbal holds you," Sir Kay reasoned. "He sent a lord, and not a commoner."
"I would have dealt better with the commoner," I observed. "Where are they now?"
"A bow shot beyond them new hills you conjured, Mage Lord," Dalcalan said, pointing with his spear. "They sent a man closer to call for parley, but then moved back."
"Well, let's go see who's knocking at our door, gentlemen," I said, pulling my cloak around me as the other riders formed up. "Ancient, if your bowmen will be so kind as to cover us from their blinds and redoubts."
"Of course, Mage Lord," he grunted, and began shouting orders.
I rode abreast with Sir Kay, Ferrando, and Tyndall, and the other cavalry filled in behind us in reasonably neat order. I rode about a third of a bowshot toward the West Flarians and halted. The other riders formed up on me, their lances posted.
"Not much to look at," Sir Kay remarked in an undertone as we closed.
"Them or us?" I asked.
"Them,"
he said after a moment's hesitation, although if I was leading them, I might have a hard time deciding, he admitted. Apart from the decently armoured man in the middle, the score of West Flarian horsemen who faced us were decidedly second stringers, rural men-at-arms in leather ringmail, each bearing a round shield with the hawk device of West Flaria on it. They seemed to ride well enough, but not as if they were used to fighting from horseback. The round shields gave that away. These were infantry on horseback, not true cavalry. You don't fight from horseback with a shield that doesn't cover your leg. Round shields were better for fighting on foot. Sir Kay noticed it too. Nobly led, but basely born, he nodded. The one near to the knight is the former castellan of Brestall Tower, I believe, Mage Lord. That would make sense, I nodded. The men on the other side were conversing, and the four in the centre finally started to walk their horses toward us. I wonder what they're saying, Sir Kay speculated. It was just idle conjecture, as one soldier will say to another while waiting around for something to happen. But I'm a mage, and I just happened to have a spell for that. Let's find out, I said. Tyndall, this is an easy one. Start with a Raelith rune, and surmount it with an Anoreth sigil. I know the spell, master, he grumbled, and began hanging it. Both of us cast the spell, known as Larsil's Gift, or the Long Ear, or by many other names in many minor variations. It allowed us to hear every word the approaching West Flarians were saying, as if we were riding next to them. Cut their bloody throats where they stand. The impudence of this, the former master of Brestall Vale, Sir Lanyelin, snarled to Sir Brommel. Making me stand at my own gate. I'm tired of these complaints, the knight said testily. If you had seen to your proper duty to defend your fief for your liege, then this upstart would never have taken it so easily. Really, Lanyelin, leaving 5 men to guard it? Who attacks at Yule? Lanyelin asked incredulously. It offends the gods. It offends your nephew, is what it does, Brommel said, and he went crying to Gimbal, and now his dad is spitting mad, and you're in the chamber pot for it. Gimbal should have given me the keep, not the brat, Lanyelin growled. What? So you could now be the lord who lost his sworn holding, and not merely a castellan caught away from his keep during a surprise attack? And now I have to go fight to bring it back to that nephew, he finished. Hope to the gods it comes not to fighting, Sir Brommel said. 4 men sick and barely on horse, 5 horsed for the first time, and the nearest reinforcements 6 hours away. Bide, put on your best war face, Lanyelin. Gods, they look like they know their business. Where in 7 hells did that ditch and wall come from? Lanyelin asked, shaking his head. I was here at spring to collect tribute, and there was no such defence. Lanyelin, did you? I was here a week ago, and it wasn't here. Duin's sack, where did it come from? He swore, coming to a stop 12 yards away. Tyndall and I dropped the long ears at the same time and looked at each other. The implications of the intelligence were obvious. We had far more advantage than we'd suspected. Sir Kay, Sir Tyndall, Captain Ferrando, I called, let's go see if they're just collecting arms for Trigg's temple houses for the blind. We walked our horses forward until we were within speaking distance. My lords, Sir Kay began with a nod, might we inquire your names? Our names, Sir Brommel asked. Very well, sir. I am Sir Brommel of Bulmont, currently in service to Lord Gimbal of West Flaria as his warden. This is Sir Lanyelin, of Brestall Vale. I am Sir Kay, castellan to Sire Minelin, called the Spellmonger, Mage Lord of Sevendor, Sir Kay said, formally gesturing to me. I bowed accordingly. With him are his captain of the guard, Sir Ferrando, and his gentleman herald, Sir Tyndall, Knight Magi, formerly of Bovall Vale. Mage Lord? Sir Brommel's eyes went wide. Knight Magi? What devilry is this? By the hand of His Grace Duke Rad, Sir Kay assured him. His Grace chose to break with tradition, but the warrant is legal and attested, as is the enfeefment of Sevendor. His eyes narrowed a bit,
and I could see him resolve to put the matter of my title aside for the moment in favour of the matter at hand.
"Gentlemen," Sir Brommel said, nodding his head in a perfunctory bow, "you seem to have a wall and ditch blocking the way to Sir Lanyelin's holding, Restall Vale. That holding is Mage Lord Minelan's, according to his warrant, signed by the hand of his grace, Rard of Castall, and attested to by Lady Arnett, mistress of lands and estates," Sir Kay countered. "That holding is West Flaria's by right of conquest," Sir Brommel said defiantly. "It was taken by Sire Gimbal himself just a few years ago. Except that domains held by the coronet cannot be legally warred upon, as every gentleman knows," Sir Kay said smoothly.
"Yet West Flaria was provoked," reasoned Sir Brommel. "We have the right of defence."
"And I encourage you to plead your case against the former caretaker," I agreed. "After meeting the man, I have no doubt you have an excellent case. But the fact is, Restall Vale is not West Flaria's. It is Seven Dawes. It is mine. Apart from its ownership by the duchy, Sire Gimbal also failed to file a proper writ of conquest with the Office of Lands and Estates within 2 years, as the law requires, nor has he paid tribute on the land in that time. You have no legal claim to Restall Vale, and now you have no Restall Vale."
"That is outrageous," spat Sir Lanyelin. "What kind of lord fights on a holy feast day?"
"Actually, I took Restall Tower back hours after you left it, 2 days before Yule, so there was no offence against the gods, if the gods get offended about such things."
"And took it while it lay poorly defended. Have you no honour, sire?"
asked Sir Lanyelin, struggling for an argument. Sir Kay and I exchanged glances.
"Honour, my lord?" I asked. "I saw the condition of the estate when I took control. I would say little of honour, if I were you. It was nearly as bad as Sir Arantal left Sevendor."
"Aye, he was the one who warned us about you," Sir Lanyelin said, before Sir Brommel could stop him. "How you rousted him from bed with a crew of thugs and cast him out."
"He was properly dismissed from service to the duchy and paid for his services," I countered. "Whither he went when he crossed the frontier, I care not."
"This is getting us nowhere," sighed Sir Brommel impatiently. "You are newly come to this region, it is clear. So you may not yet have heard of the honour and puissance of Sire Gimbal, the warbird of West Flaria."
"'Tis true," I conceded. "I've been otherwise occupied, and haven't kept up on the news. Tell us, wasn't it he who was responsible for the rescue of Tudri in the Alshari Wilderlands, against the goblin hordes this summer?"
No, Sir Brommel said, confused. "But Sire Gimbal, wasn't he the one who convinced the Dukes of Alshar and Castall to raise their banners in common might against the Gavanni hordes?"
asked Sir Tyndall innocently. I could tell he was enjoying this.
"Well, I suppose we all were." "Nay, that was another," Sir Brommel dismissed. "But the warbird of West Flaria is renowned for his—"
"Was he, perhaps, the man who valiantly and brilliantly led the defence of Beauvoir Castle against said invasion?" Sir Kay asked pointedly. "I hear that was a hard-fought battle, where he slew thousands." I was surprised by the admission. It was the first time I had heard Sir Kay's critique of my leadership during the siege. Valiant, from him, was quite the compliment.
"No," Sir Brommel said testily. "My lord of West Flaria is reputed throughout the Riverlands as a great captain of war. He is mighty at arms himself, a demon on horseback with lance and shield. Those who face him on foot, sword in hand, feel their ancestors flee them, so certain is their doom."
"He sounds like a pretty strong fellow," I observed thoughtfully.
"Perhaps we should just give it back, master," Tyndall said, clearly joking. "I wouldn't want to provoke his ire." "Best you don't, young knight," said Brommel darkly, missing my apprentice's sarcasm entirely. "Then your lord leads many men?" Sir Kay asked curiously. "Fighting men," he amended, pointedly looking at the troops we faced. One actually looked like he might spill out of his saddle.
"Well, certainly. All the brave men of West Flaria would rally to the banner of the warbird," he declared.
"He has the command of at least 20 strong knights of his own household, many vassal knights,
and 40 men-at-arms. That is a lot. Tyndall nodded sagely.
Over 100, Sir Kay agreed. 100 fighting men, or more. And they could be summoned quickly, no doubt.
Within days, Sir Bromel assured us pointedly.
Days! And he has allies, Sir Lanyelin said. Should he call upon them, you can safely add 50 or more. Good night's all. What say you to that, Sir Mage?
He asked boastfully. I reached out and contacted Rondal, mind to mind.
Are our troops in position?
We're set up just behind the dike,
he assured me. When you see the signal, march the archers and infantry out quickly to fill in behind the horsemen, but hold formation. No one knocks, no one draws without my say-so.
Of course, master.
Would the horn of Perundara be appropriate? I've studied it, and I've even attempted it successfully.
That's a very good suggestion, Rondal. Just the thing.
Yes, when they emerge from behind the barricades, go ahead and cast that one.
Good thinking.
I could tell he was pleased. His former master, Garkescu, had been intimidated by Rondal's intelligence and had discouraged his curiosity with learning new spells. And when he had succeeded, he was stingy with praise. But the lad deserved it for this idea. The Horn of Perundara was a flashy spell, and one that had actually played a role in history a few times. Developed in the early days of the later Magocracy, the spell involved expelling air rapidly between two planes of magical force in such a way as to cause a low, deep rumble to sound. If you did it just right, and managed to project a sonic vibration of the right frequency, all sorts of things could happen, like shattering Archmage Fisandula's legendary glass pavilion, or bringing down the seawall of Gothabor. But mostly it just made a low and intimidating noise, like a giant blowing his nose, or a dragon farting, or something else equally as dreadful and harmless. There were variations on the spell that could manage two or more horns at once, creating harmonies, or disharmonies, that could drive men mad, or to soil themselves, or to flee in fear. But the sheer volume and mysterious nature of the noise was reputed to be very disheartening. Just the sort of thing you want to use on unwelcome guests.
What do I say about it, Sir Lanyelin? I say that raising a force of 200, or even half that number, in a few days is indeed a notable achievement for a jack baron like Gimbal. I pause to let my words sink into his thick skull. But I am a mage lord, I continued, casting back my mantle and rising in my stirrups, much to the annoyance of Traveller. What your lord can do in days, I can do in moments. With that, I launched a bolt of light from my fist. It shot up in the air 100 feet. The Flareans cowered uneasily under the bright display against the grey winter sky. No doubt they expected some deadly bolt to emanate from it, and were surprised when it just faded away without apparent effect. Sir Lanyelin was about to say something snide about the spell, when 100 Bovali, no, they would be 7 Dori after today, marched through the gap in the embankment, brandishing swords, spears and shields, while another 50 or 60 bowmen climbed up the berm behind them, their great Wilderland's bows visible. In conjunction with the sudden appearance, there was a low, rising blare. The horn of Perundara filled the air around us, until all of the horses were annoyed.
"Dear gods," Sir Bromel said, his eyes wide in wonder.
That is the new 7 Dori militia, Captain Ferrando said proudly, as the invisible horn's call faded away. The first company, that is. They will be settling in the Brestal Vale, just on the other side of the pass, and they are not likely to yield easily. Vicious, half-wild wildermen. They will also be garrisoning Brestal Tower and patrolling our frontiers. If provoked, they will be the ones raiding West Flareon territory and defending 7 Dori lands with their lives. This is their new home. They will not lightly yield it.
You dare arm your peasantry, Sir Lanyelin said, fear in his eyes.
The threat of peasant revolt was a constant worry for the nobility, and keeping the commoners unarmed was the gentry's best defense against them, apart from actually treating them decently.
Are you mad?
I'm getting there,
I promised. Yes, I have armed my peasantry. That's how we do things in the mage lands. You bring war to our doorstep and you will be taking a portion home with you. Now, all of those deeds we just asked if your precious warbird had done, I said, trying to get just the right amount of arrogant contempt in my voice. They were already shocked out of their boots by the sudden appearance of a company of soldiers. Time to remind them of whose land this was. Time to brag like I was trying to get into their skirts. Those are things that I've done. I paused a moment, making sure I had their attention. I'm a damned good war mage. I've incinerated goblins by the thousands. I've survived 100 engagements. If that was not worthy enough for you, I fought down every inch of the Frisian Peninsula, on foot, back during the campaign. And if even that isn't worth enough for you, my lord, I've pissed off 2 dukes, held a war wand on a countess, and threatened to raise a populated town. Since midsummer. So I'm not worried about Sire Gimbal or his mighty warriors. In fact, I'm giving you a warning that you should find some diplomatic way to pass along to him. If West Flaria dares to interfere in the affairs of Sevendor again, then I will not hesitate to teach the warbird a lesson in the art of war, the likes of which he could not possibly imagine. I fixed them both with a steely gaze, trying my best to emulate the look of stern defiance Duke Rad practiced so well. If I needed to intimidate them, then I succeeded. Sir Brommel looked pale, and Sir Lanyelin looked anxious and afraid. I think Rondal's spell was helping, but the naked threat of a small army at my back probably had something to do with it too. "The war bard will not look kindly on this," Sir Lanyelin said darkly, spitting insultingly at my feet. "You've stolen away the estate of his son, which he stole first. I don't care. If I even suspect you're molesting my domain, then I shall take notice. If he wishes, Gimbal may steal another, but if he comes against Sevendor again, he'll regret it sorely."
"Sire Gimbal," Sir Lanyelin began loudly.
"Shut up, Lanyelin," growled Sir Brommel. He at least understood what was happening. "It's bad enough you've lost the veil. Do not compound your folly by getting us killed during a parley. This news must be brought to Gimbal at once. Then the matter will be in the warbird's hands. Let us depart before your mouth sees your heart stopped." Sir Lanyelin sneered at me. "By sorcery, perhaps, but in honourable combat? I think not. Mage lord or not, this stripling could not stand up to a fight with a real knight." I ignored the provocation. "I've told you how it's going to be from now on. The law is on my side, the Duke is on my side, and all these seasoned warriors are on my side. My side wins. Relay that to your master." Sir Lanyelin started to speak again, but stopped at Sir Brommel's harsh look. The 2 men turned their horses and rode back to their escort without another word. "Well done, Rondal," I said to my apprentice, mind to mind. "That was a focused execution, the spell and the troop deployment."
"So I suppose we've seen the last of them," Tyndall smirked sarcastically.
"We established our dominance," Sir Kay nodded. "That was what was needed. No doubt we will have more trouble with West Flaria, but not before spring, I think. And I think that we need to raise that embankment another 5 or 6 feet and start firming it up into a real, properly dressed stone wall," I decided. "In fact, I envision a proper gatehouse there, eventually. An iron culvert in the stream, the dike faced with stone, the tower rebuilt, and a full watch, regardless. If Sire Gimbal is anything like his brat, then he's not going to be very happy about this at all."
"It occurs to me to expect a raid soon, sire,"
Sir Kay agreed, thoughtfully. Captain Ferrando nodded. "At the very least, Mage Lord. He'll try to slip a few dozen men past our defences and to burn as much as they can. Kill a few peasants, slaughter some stock. That's about all he can do between now and spring, and the worst of the winter is yet before us." He glanced warily at the sky. It looked snowy. "Then I want the watch doubled. Until we can settle in properly, that's about all we can do. But maybe we can augment
the defence magically, I said, trailing off in thought. We spent the rest of the afternoon doing just that, after I thanked my troops and dismissed them. They marched back to the castle proudly, Sir Kay and Captain Ferrando leading them. I made the defensive effort a practical exercise for my apprentices. It's not often you get to play around with such things, and for a few glorious hours we were like boys in a sandlot. It was an excellent opportunity for teaching my apprentices the basics of summoning earth elementals to move dirt and rocks around, how to prepare alarm spells, and how to cast sigils of foreboding in the areas nearby the gate. I wanted anyone who was considering crossing the gap to feel deep in their heart that it was a very bad idea to consider doing harm to Sevendor. It wouldn't stop them from doing it, perhaps, but they'd feel really bad about it if they came with the intent to harm. The boys picked up on the defensive magics quickly, too. They were both smart lads with ample talent, but they were still lads. I could detect some rivalry starting to build between them, but I didn't discourage it. That kind of thing could force both of them to strive a little more. Tyndall was bold, ambitious and audacious. Rondal was thoughtful, subtle and cautious. All traits valuable to a mage, regardless of his position. But convincing each other of the advantages of the other's strength would be difficult, I quickly learned. Tyndall seemed to attack everything he did like a dog pouncing on a nest of silk snakes, and was openly contemptuous of caution as an unmanly vice. Tyndall was addicted to excitement and adventure, but cursed with rashness and bravado. Rondal, on the other hand, preferred to thoroughly consider the implications before he acted, like a cat watching a mouse hole, and considering impetuous action a sign of stupidity. He liked to study a spell, and know it thoroughly before he tried it, and then only with the minimum power. If Tyndall's failing was too much confidence with too little merit, Rondal's was the opposite. Indeed, they were opposite in many ways, and that became a problem. Before an hour had passed, they were both angry with each other, and forced me to intervene. I didn't mind. They needed guidance as much as instruction. After I had finished the technical lesson, I sat them down and gave them a stern lecture on the importance of teamwork and complementary styles. I'd like to think they listened to me. As it was, we got some good work accomplished that afternoon. While the curious guards looked on, we directed a trio of earth elementals to continue to excavate a deeper ditch in front of the dike and use the material to raise the height of the embankment. That's trickier than it sounds, particularly in this stony environment. The earth elementals were strong, but difficult to control, particularly for the boys. They really had to push to get them to work, and twice Tyndall lost his focus enough for the magical template to break up, forcing him to recast the spell. Tyndall doesn't have the same affinity with earth that Rondal does, and it showed. By late afternoon, the earthen wall was a relatively level 10 feet high, with a 10-foot deep ditch directly in front of it. An earthen causeway behind it allowed archers and defenders to get to the top of the dike quickly, once proper wooden stairs or ladders were added. And we strengthened the two tiny archery redoubts the watch had built at either end of the dike, no more than a slightly raised platform protected by a berm of earth. I could envision small stone turrets providing covering fire in the future. "This will have to do for now," I nodded, finishing my thought out loud. "I wish I knew more about earth magic, engineering or construction. I mean, I can dig a hole, I can pile up dirt just fine. But we're going to need something a little more substantial to guard this pass, eventually." Tyndall looked at me surprised. "You think that we'll keep having trouble with West Flaria after we just sent them running?" "No. He thinks that the dead god isn't going to be stopped, and eventually the penumbra could extend to here," Rondal said, a little scornfully. "Isn't that right, Master?" "That is correct, but I expect we have years, perhaps decades, before that comes to pass, and I hope we can find a way to stop him long before then," I said philosophically. "You have to prepare for the worst and hope for the best, even if all you have is a pile of dirt to work with."
"That was quite philosophical, Master,"
Rondal observed diplomatically.
"It was quite practical, Master,"
Tyndall said with a glance.
"Oh, stop it, the both of you. You both did splendidly today. Quit trying to compete for my favour. It's ignoble.
and that's something we have to start paying attention to. Today proved that.
If those idiots were nobles, I'm not sure I want to be,
Rondol griped. You didn't even have to talk to them, Tyndall dismissed. But they were a bunch of boneheads, he admitted. Well, you two aren't, I reminded them. I know how intelligent you both are, so there's no excuse for you acting like a couple of peasant kids. You're both knights magi. You need to act like it. But you're also my apprentices, and you still have a hell of a lot to learn before you're ready to take your exams.
Who wins, hairy sack?
Tyndall burst out. 10 minutes ago we were preparing for the future goblin onslaught, and now you want us to study for exams? No one said that being a mage lord was easy. Or fun. I looked at them, maybe a little harshly. We have a lot of people depending on us, and now we have another enemy. Need I remind you how many others we already own? I'm not particularly concerned about Sire Gimbal, but that's no excuse to get lazy about the important stuff. We've got a lot of winter left to get through, and we've got a lot of work to do before spring. For one thing, I want one of you two to be at the watchtower as much as possible, so you can warn me, mind to mind, if we have any invaders. And while you're here, I want you to take turns making this place more defensible. It's good practice, and we need the stronger defense.
You want us to stay in that ruin?
Rondol asked, incredulously.
It's not the worst place I've slept, Menelan,
Tyndall whined.
But
that's Master Menelan, I reminded him. I could care less about titles of nobility, but in matters of craft I insist on respect. Understood.
Yes, Master,
they both said, properly chagrined. The wind picked up and I realized how chilly it would be tonight. I felt a little guilty about consigning them to the tower like that, but damn it, we needed someone there. A high mage. One of the advantages we had was our ability to communicate. I wanted to be able to react swiftly in case of a raid, and having a high mage at the gate was my best way to do that. Besides, I hadn't been lying. They did need the practice. Perhaps if they had to live out here, they'd be inspired to improve the place a bit too. All right, Rondol, you take watch for now.
Oh,
he groaned, throwing his head back expressively. While Tyndall goes back up to the castle to pack, he'll be back here at dusk to relieve you. After that, it's one day on watch, one day off.
Master, complained Tyndall, I'm senior apprentice. Why do I have to?
Because as senior apprentice, I could not deny you the honor of the inaugural watch, I said with a smirk. Rank hath its privileges, but it also hath its duties. Don't worry, it's temporary, just until we can stabilize the frontier a bit better. But for the next few weeks, this is home for half of your time. Got it?
Yes, Master,
they moaned in unison. Neither one looked very happy. Just to prove I'm not truly evil, I'll give you a flask of spirits to help keep you warm. And you'll be in charge out here nominally as the nobleman, but I expect you to defer to the guard captain in most matters. Understood?
Yes, Master,
they said gloomily. I smiled as I motioned for ancient Dalcalan to bring Traveller to me. I'd had him stabled at the little enclosure behind the dike while we worked. I'm so glad we could have this little moment of instruction. It is times like this that I really appreciate having apprentices.